Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello and welcome to Footballistically Arsenal. I am Boyd Hilton. Psychic Josh is with us in his magnificent Soho House Star office. Hi, Josh.
Good evening, Boyd. Great to be here.
Fabulous. Fabulous to be here. And in equally fantastic news, we're joined by staunch regular guest, Ricky Lawrence. Hello. Hello, Rick. How's it going?
Good evening. I'm well, thanks. How are you guys?
Very well. Did you... I know Josh went to the King Power Stadium. Did you get to go?
No, I wasn't at Leicester. No. I was at Villa. Right. So I feel like, you know, if we're picking who got the better... No.
Yeah.
But a game
Midlands,
to go to.
Midlands based away game.
Exactly. Yeah. So no is a short answer to your question.
Did you manage to I kind of watched it on a series of dodgy streams on my phone and kind of got the general gist of it. I'm not trying to get you in trouble with your
I was gonna reveal where I watched, but just in case the authorities are listening, I had a perfect viewing from minute one to minute
really?
Whatever it was, 96 or whatever. Yeah, it was perfect. Okay. So yeah, that was nice. That was
Let's say you happen to be on holiday for the weekend in, you know, Portugal or something, and
because the
rest of the world gets to see all the Premier League games like that. We don't. Yeah, it's outrageous. In fact, three games in a row, Josh, without being on TV. Absolutely extraordinary scenes.
It is extraordinary given where Arsenal are in the table. I think some of that probably comes down to maybe expectations of where Arsenal might be at this point in the season. And I was looking back this week or a few days ago at the BBC article that is always published a few days prior to the start of the season, where all 20 pundits select who they believe will be in the top four. And, you know, none of them have got Arsenal in the top three, and just, you know, a handful had Arsenal as fourth. So maybe we can forgive some of the broadcasters maybe not quite foreseeing, Arsenal being in this position.
Also, I think all the broadcasters have to show, don't they have to show a certain amount? There's a limit. They can't show every single
game.
There's
a minimum number.
Yeah. Right.
But there are, without giving... anything away that's overly insightful, I think there are elements of, you know, conversations that of course happen between the two broadcasters and choices that are made on following specific games or clubs. So it's just worked out that way. That,
but I also think they have to save up, don't they? To some extent, they want to show all our games when it gets to the crunch.
Correct.
When it gets
you look ahead now to April, there's a reality of how much we're on telly, albeit, you know. The big one, Man City Arsenal, end of April, is a BT game that, you know, usually I guess when we get to the business end of a season, we associate these games with Sky. So yeah,
That's interesting. I didn't realize that was a BT game. That's interesting.
It's a BT game on the Wednesday
midweek,
night.
Midweek. Wow.
I'm going I think that will be what. Boy, come on. If we're still in the title race, can I get you to Manchester for that game?
Oh, maybe I should try. Yeah. What date's that?
April the 26th, Wednesday night. I mean, I know you have a innumerable number of social commitments that involve you having to.
It's not so much that.
Talk to people about their TV shows. Come on.
Oh, do you know what? Actually, do you know where I think I'm going to be? I think I'm going to be away for that week. I think I'm going to be in LA that week. Because that game is the day before the last ever James Corden show in America.
Final show?
Yeah, I'm hoping to, yeah. I don't think I'm going to be around. What a week that's... And in fact, that's the day before the final. And then on Saturday, it's Arsenal v Chelsea as well.
Well, I'm sure Ben will want to watch with you for that Arsenal City game. It could be a big LA kind of viewing party for the Arsenal game.
It could be, yeah. Yeah, that's going to be...
That'd be incredibly exciting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Boyd, if you can't get you to Manchester, never mind. I presume you obviously would have seen our Europa League draw. You're not planning a little quick trip to Lisbon either then?
I can't go to Lisbon because I'm hosting a thing the next morning. So I can't go to Lisbon.
Well, actually, Boyd, I hate to break it to you, but did you see
I could do a day trip.
5:45 p.m. There is a flight back. A few of us were discussing it earlier. There is a flight back about 10 p.m. So it's doable.
Yeah, I'm not sure my constitution is strong enough and my blood pressure could take that.
Was it discussed amongst the big club level names?
Brief discussion, I think. Yeah, right. Yeah, especially because some people in my WhatsApp group, shall we say, have quite lavish living arrangements in Portugal. So you know, it was definitely discussed. Yeah, I'm not sure if anyone.
You can name yourself there. Don't feel shy.
Yeah, I don't have a villa in Portugal, contrary to popular rumor. But we should get on with the game. Where you were there. Now, from watching it on the variety of dodgy streams on my phone and the highlights on Match of the Day and the extended highlights on Sky, etc., it seemed one of the most extraordinarily dominant games I've ever seen of Arsenal away. It's only away. I mean, it was almost unbelievable the extent to which they completely... whether Leicester were terrible and could barely muster one chance... The XG was like the lowest ever, wasn't it, in recorded history, I think, by the XG, that XG people. Was that a case of Arsenal just completely nullifying them without a football, or were they just absolutely terrible?
As with all these things, it felt like a bit of both. I must admit, almost being there, I didn't feel it was quite as dominant as then it did look on the stats and on the highlights that were shown. And I think it might have even been Ricky in a WhatsApp group I'm in mentioned this XG of 0.01 and sort of seemed like it couldn't possibly. Man. It seems totally absurd. But then you think about what they had, and it was basically one shot that went wide, really, that I could remember come the end of the game. There was a one shot on target, just looking here at the match stats, 10 shots for... there wasn't a shot on target, but there was just one shot, which went wide. But even Arsenal, I think, only it says here two shots on target. So it didn't feel quite as totally dominant. I thought Leicester were really poor. It seems a really obvious thing to say, but as soon as Maddison's name wasn't on the team sheet, there was a sense of, well, you know, playing Leicester, you'd feel fairly confident the way it's gone this season, but playing them without Maddison, you know, how much more so? And so it proved, but defensively, Arsenal were... You know, we're excellent, as it were, across the whole pitch. I think the decision to play Trossard was vindicated and worked out in a positive performance. And it felt like Arsenal were going to score eventually. We created enough opportunities and movements. And so it proved. And, you know, well done to Martinelli, who's obviously had an element of, you know, being left out, you know, recently and, you know, doing very well as when he did come on and then he's been given a start again and, you know, he took the goal so well. But it was an incredibly enjoyable day out, a nice day trip. I was with a friend of the podcast, Alex Brooker, and Gareth Parker, I should say. We all had the drive up together and...
I saw Roman Kemp behind you as well.
Roman Kemp was with us as
one time. Yeah. We had Roman Kemp on this show, didn't we, years ago, before he was anything. He was.
Well, I wouldn't say before he was anything, but he certainly was not of the profile he is now. But no. I'm sure he'll come back on. Weirdly, Alex and Roman are co-hosting the London Football Awards coming up soon. You and I went to that when Dermot was there. I really enjoyed it. I mean, and obviously you've got the Willow Foundation, which is an amazing charity that has obviously the Bob Wilson links the 13th of March, Boyd. So yeah, I'm going to hope to be there and looking forward to it.
Okay, excellent. Anyway, Ricky. Josh literally summed up the entire game, I thought, in very, very nicely in a few minutes. But when you saw, let's go back to the team selection. When you saw Trossard had been picked instead of Eddie Nketiah, what did you think of that decision? And what did you think of the outcome?
Well, I actually saw it. It got shared with me that was likely to happen at probably around 7 a.m. or around that time. There's a leaked lineups profile somewhere or some form of social media. So Nketiah actually has been struggling with a knock. So he was going to be rested, stroke, I don't know, given some time on the bench, whatever you want to call it, for the game. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. I mean, I think Nketiah has done a good job, which seems to be tailing off slightly since he's had to come in for Jesus. Don't want to seem too harsh on him, but I think, in my opinion, he's shown that sort of moving forward next season, he should be our third choice rather than our second choice, which may not be the most popular of opinions, but I think he's done okay. But yeah, I wouldn't trust him to lead the line regularly. So I was fine with Trossard coming in, and I thought Trossard had a good game. I think their team news, as Josh alluded to, was probably more important. Just no Maddison, and Gary Lineker even said it on Match of the Day, which I thought was quite a bold statement from her, albeit he is obviously out there as a Leicester fan. It was quite a bold statement for a presenter to say. I think he said, no Maddison, no hope. And that was what it proved to be. It would have been probably the most unjust result of our season had we not have won that game.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there was no way we should have been, like, I was watching it from, like, you know, almost behind a pillow at the end. And that shouldn't have been the case. It should have been so, so easy. And it kind of was, but also, like, it was so bad, so bad that it should have been a walk in the park. But no. I listened to another Arsenal podcast today.
How dare you? Sorry, Josh. Yeah, wait a minute, hold on.
The Athletic one, I pay like £1 a month or whatever.
There's another Arsenal podcast?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you're the pool of two. And they were talking on there about the fact that it's, you know, we're going to have to use these players. We're going to have to use all these, like, you know, we're going to have to rotate. And I'm sort of the opinion almost like the complete opposite. I know we've got Europe coming up, but I don't know if I'm right or not, but I still see there's being such a drop-off from our first team, bar maybe Tommy Essendon. Obviously, he'd bet against Man City and cost us a goal. Obviously, Nketiah's done fine. And Smith-Rowe just hasn't been fit. And then it's only really Trossard that I trust. After that, like, Zinchenko's just so much better than Tierney. So much better than Tierney. Vieira, I'm frightened when he comes on the pitch. And I don't mean to be harsh. Just when we're chasing a guy, I don't trust, you know, I don't look to him. And, so I do think, you know, if it's Nketiah, if it's Trossard, if it's Martinelli, at the moment, it's not a huge difference. After that, though, it does worry me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that because I think, first of all, I think Trossard showed particularly like that he could play like like Jesus, couldn't he? Like he was much more in that mold than Eddie is. Eddie's like a kind of standard, pretty good, you know, kind of hold the ball up forward. Whereas I thought Trossard did really, really well in being that false nine and being kind of distracting attention from the defenders and all of that, and scored a brilliant goal. I think that it was the refereeing decisions that if they'd have gone our way, which they could have easily done on another day, brackets, because there's no conspiracy against us, but of course it does feel that way. It feels that way again after that game. But like, you know, I would say, even though it was a foul, Ben White's foul on the keeper, I would say 75% of the time that is not given. That goal is not stopped by VAR because of that reason. I thought that was a really unusual moment use of VAR and highlighted again how unbelievably and irritatingly up and down VAR is and unreliable and confusing and inconsistent it is. Because you see that all the time. There's, you know, players get hold of goalkeepers all the time. There's melees in the area. And then when, like, almost like 5 minutes later, Trossard creates that spectacular shot and a brilliant goal, and it gets ruled out by VAR. So I thought that, those moments, and then Saka not getting the penalty, that he was equally grappled with, even more so than Ben White was grappling with the goalkeeper, to not get that. All of those things added to the fact that we only had a very small margin of victory, and yet it felt like we dominated the game. Did you see those incidents, Josh?
Yeah, I certainly did. I mean, in the ground, it wasn't even one of those goals where you're like, oh, we better wait and see what happens with this one with VAR. Like, there'd been a full-on celebration, 1-0 up, no doubt in our minds. But then it was, of course, as soon as you start seeing the VAR check, you worry. And then as soon as the referee has gone over, it's an inevitable situation. But yeah, in the guise of this having to be a clear and obvious error, I wasn't convinced. But then on Match of the Day, you know, I don't think there was too much kind of objection, certainly in the commentary, was there, in terms of thinking about what the decision was. And it was, you know, open to interpretation. Look, does Ben White have a hold of his hand? It's not the clearest angle, but probably he does. And there's a level of impediment. But it was incredibly frustrating. I'm with you. I think the vast majority of the time that doesn't get overturned. So
it was funny. Talking about match of the day, it was quite weird because I was listening to Five Live. So I was listening to Five Live as well as trying to watch it as much as I could. And on Five Live, the commentator literally said after he was very much vehemently of the opinion, surprised that the goal was disallowed and then that Saka penalty wasn't given. And he said both of those controversial decisions, no doubt, will be looked at in detail on Match of the Day. And they weren't. They didn't look at the Saka penalty at all. Do you notice that in the summary of the game? I mean, he mentioned it. Jonathan Pearce mentioned it in his commentary, of course, but it was not analysed after the game. It almost felt like Match of the Day has kind of given up on analysing VAR decisions because it gets so fucking boring and irritating and annoying.
Well, there's an element of that. I didn't even ask Micah, obviously, about why that clip wasn't shown, unless they just felt like it wasn't enough of even a clear kind of penalty to therefore create a big talking point worthy of it. I mean, it's tough, right? They've only got a few minutes to analyze each game. So I guess that's the answer. I guess they probably concluded it wasn't.
Yeah, it was just surprising. Yeah, and I mean, they spent most of the time being very positive about Arsenal, particularly about Trossard. Go back to Ricky's point, which I meant to. So when on this other podcast, when they talked about rotating more, what they're talking about within the league games as well, because as far as I'm concerned, like, he can rotate, please God, rotate as much as you want in the Europa. I mean, for God's sake, play whoever. But I'm totally with you that the drop-off is big, almost every position. And what's interesting as well on this point about rotating, he very, very reluctantly makes substitutions, I think. You know, and I think, and I even agree with that. I think when the only time I get worried about us at the moment, I think we're playing so brilliantly, generally, and controlling games so well. But it's an equilibrium, isn't it? And as soon as he starts bringing on one or two, a Vieira, say, for example, you think, oh, it's going to upset the equilibrium because we're completely dominating. And Pep often goes through games without making many substitutions. It feels like a thing he's learned from Pep. And I think that's fine.
So they did say, or it was the Athletic podcast, and I think it was Amy Lawrence was saying that, you know, we'll have to start some of these players. I'm not sure if she's specifying the league, but I think she was alluding to that fact, or that was her opinion. I think, yeah, for me, obviously, you know, we've got on paper two of our easiest home games to come over the next, you know, what, 5 or 6 days or whatever. And There is an argument, I would say, you know, people would say, well, why don't we start Tierney instead of Zinchenko, or give Tomiyasu a start? Maybe even, you know, play Jorginho and Partey if Partey's fit. Rest Xhaka, whatever it be over these next couple of games. I hear the argument. I just think every point in the league, or every 3 points really, is so important that... Can you imagine if we drew with Bournemouth on Saturday, but Tomiyasu played? I'm not saying Tomiyasu would probably be the reason we wouldn't beat Bournemouth, but I just don't see a reason to, other than if you think it could affect them down the road. I just think we should do, you know, take Zinchenko off in 60 minutes if we're tuning up against Bournemouth or whatever.
Right.
But at the same time, like, Bournemouth and Everton are going to be scrapping. You know, they need these points as much as we do, and I just don't see us needing to, or don't see the risk with 14 league games, which is okay, it's almost half a season, but these games are just so important. We are top of the league. We could be 5 points clear by, what, 10 o'clock on Wednesday. Just think, just play your best team. But saying that, we were in this position last season, albeit challenging for fourth, and he had to play the same team every single week. And by the end, you know, we lost 2-0 and 3-0 in our two biggest, or 3-0 and 2-0 in our two biggest games. So I do hear the argument. I just think, do I want to see Tierney instead of Zinchenko on Wednesday night? No.
Yeah, what do you think, Josh? I kind of agree with that. I think I mean, the Zinchenko Tierney thing, I feel really sorry for Tierney, absolutely gutted. And he's clearly, it's really sad for him, I think, that he's such a brilliant, enthusiastic player and personality. But he cannot do, can he? He literally cannot do what Zinchenko does for us. And particularly, in fact, on the game against Leicester, I thought was a prime example of how Zinchenko is so important in that role, because he just completely swamps the midfield, helps us dominate the ball. And they couldn't get the ball out to one of their players for most of that match, partly due to Zinchenko being on it so much. And I just think Tierney's not going to be like that, is he, Josh?
The longer this goes on, the more you start to wonder if he can stay at the club next season. Yeah. He's too good, isn't he, almost to be in this position, and there will be suitors who want to take him and nurture him and love him and make him absolutely first choice and play him every game, and good teams at that. So there is a fear on that, because, you know, we would absolutely love having him. Look, you can envisage a situation. We've got Europa League back very soon that he's going to play, and if he plays particularly well, then you start to wonder if there is a more confidence in putting him back into the Premier League team. I also don't think it's impossible we see him, as Ricky alluded there. We've got, you know, an unusual situation in having the sort of the midweek game turned around by a Saturday game pretty quickly. I'd be surprised if we see exactly the same starting 11 for both. And if you're looking for possible players that you might, you know, see involved, then you wouldn't say it's impossible that we see Tierney. You'd certainly expect him to get minutes, which obviously he didn't even get off the bench on Saturday. Even Tomiyasu only came on in injury time at the very end. Yeah. So whereas Arteta has been changing the fullbacks pretty frequently earlier in the games, he resisted the opportunity to do that. I did see that Kiwior, I think, is getting a run out tonight for the under-21s, as is Emil Smith-Rowe. So it's good to get, you know, game time in for them, even if it seems more likely it'll be Smith-Rowe, who we see getting Premier League minutes on the back of that. I'm probably with you. I don't see Tierney coming into the league side, and he is unfortunate down to what Zinchenko's done. But I'd love to see him get enough football between now and the end of a season where he wants to stay, but it just starts to feel about that possibly not being reality.
I do think one of the strengths in our, like, one of the biggest things, it's really been since the World Cup, I feel, is Zinchenko and the role he's been playing. Yeah. And Tierney can't play that role. I think there's one argument to say, well, maybe it's good to have a left back that can offer something different to Zinchenko. On the other hand, if you want to still play this way, I don't think there's any point really having Tierney at the club. If you want a like-for-like replacement for Zinchenko, let's say Zinchenko was out for a period of time and he wanted to carry on playing the way we're playing, there is no point doing that with Tierney, because he's just not the same player. He doesn't have that skill set, which is either fine and we adapt, or we replace him with someone that can come in and play the same way as Zinchenko. I think Tierney's a fine player, but I don't think he's anything more than that. And I think we've maybe... just gone to a level that he's not able to get to. That might sound really harsh, but I think right now where Josh seems to think it's harsh, I think Tierney is all right. He probably looked better when we were a poorer side, but now I think we're a better side and he's not quite up to the standards that we require right now. Do I think if we played him in the next two games, if he played 90 minutes against Everton and Bournemouth, would we still win if everyone else played, or if the rest of the team was the same? Yeah, we probably would, because Everton and Bournemouth aren't great sides, but Zinchenko has been really, really, really important for us. And I would rather we didn't, you know, change the team to give Kieran Tierney minutes.
I think if there is an argument to be made that Tierney should get some minutes, it would be maybe against these teams that are going to play like a low block against us and have all the men behind the ball, maybe, because he might pose more of a threat. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes we have played games recently, in fact, where we haven't created quite as many chances. I mean, you could argue even against Leicester that was the case. And maybe Tierney might provide something new.
But I wouldn't drop Zinchenko. I just think Zinchenko was probably our best pair in the first half on Saturday. It was funny because I said no one really, I'd say probably Trossard and Zinchenko were our best players on Saturday. But I think Leicester was so bad, particularly in the first half, that we didn't have to do anything to get to a good position. And then it was from those good positions, we just didn't really create as much as we should have done. Yeah. We obviously scored early and then we just couldn't capitalize upon it. But they were so bad, especially in the first half. They were just giving the ball back to us over and over and over again, that it was almost too easy and no one had to do anything. Like Saka had a really quiet game, partly because he didn't, you know, he was almost like, well, you know, he was either not getting the ball because we were just having chances straight away and it didn't have to be involved in them. Or I guess, you know, maybe he could have done more when he did get them. But it was a strange, especially the first half was strange. We should have put the game to bed though, of course. But yeah, I feel maybe I'm labouring the point a little bit, but I just think Zinchenko's playing particularly well at the moment. Tierney's okay, but it's too different. I'd say if you want to mix it up and have a different sort of setup, then play Tierney, but I just think Zinchenko has been too important right now to play around with it. I guess though the risk is, or the flip side is, rest Zinchenko now because we need him, and you know, maybe give him a chance to have a breather on Wednesday night or Saturday.
Yeah, maybe. We'll talk more about the game and more about what's coming up as well after this break. And we're back from the break. There's also the interesting thing is his party was available, wasn't he? He was on the bench. He came on for Odegaard, I think, rather than Jorginho, as you might expect, or even Xhaka. And I wonder if he might not, you know, you'd think normally, wouldn't you? You'd think party is so important to us that he'll be straight back in the team. But I wonder if he might even persevere with Jorginho, Odegaard. And so a lot of people are saying Xhaka deserves a rest because Xhaka's played every single game, isn't he? Pretty much, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, I can't envisage a situation where his party gets back to full fitness that he isn't in that team. I think he's absolutely critical. But Jorginho's influence in these last few games has probably been beyond what most of us might have thought.
Yeah.
He wasn't necessarily probably expected to even, you know, start too many games in his first month as an Arsenal player, and but for Partey's injury, then he might not have. But the way he has come in does give you that little bit of comfort in thinking, well, what if, you know, Xhaka could do with a game off? It wouldn't be quite as influential as you thought it maybe would be, you know, 6 weeks ago. So, yeah, it's definitely a positive, isn't it? And he, you know, he's already getting his name sung loud and proud by the away fans. He seems to have sort of bedded in really, really quickly. And it's an unusual situation, really. You look at Trossard, you look at Jorginho. We've got two players that have come in and started games very, very, very quickly for us, having, you know, I wouldn't say beat out in the cold, but obviously Trossard was a strange situation at Brighton, not playing. Jorginho in and out of a struggling Chelsea team. And here they are, and they're, you know, starting games for Arsenal in the Premier League, top of the league.
Yeah, Jorginho had a couple of absolutely incredible passes, didn't he, Rick, on Saturday? Just like beautiful, right through the middle passes that are incredible. You do remember, I did forget, someone mentioned on Twitter or that he was third in the Ballon d'Or in 2021. Third only to Lionel Messi and Robert Lewandowski.
Yeah, there was one pass in particular in the first half. He played a lovely ball to Saka, who maybe should have done a little better. I think Jorginho's settled in, really, as you'd expect someone who, of his age and his experience and playing in the Premier League, would have done. That's probably exactly what Arsenal expected to get out of him. Probably similar to Trossard. That's the advantage of signing play, especially during the season. Yeah. They shouldn't need to, you know, have that same bedding in time. If they have to play in pre-season, maybe it's sort of you just keep going, you know, you're already playing, you keep going. His experience, like I said, and that's the advantage of signing Premier League players, especially, you know, of a certain age maybe. He's been very good. I'm slightly worried. There was a situation, I think it was in the 90 whatever minute, where Dewsbury Hall tried to go around Jorginho. It was over on the left, and if you remember and he walked past him because just like he wasn't there, because I think Jorginho had got to the point where he could really move, and he's not the most mobile player anyway.
Yeah, I was surprised he wasn't substituted.
I thought, mate, I would say he was a bit shaken up, and then he still brought Odegaard off for party. Odegaard obviously isn't known for his defensive ability, but that is where we do have, I guess, a bit of a, you know, an empty space where we don't really have anyone that can come off the bench from a midfield perspective to help us see out the game. And on a similar note about substitutions, I've been surprised, you know, it's probably been a total of 4 minutes, but I've been surprised that he's brought off Zinchenko when we've been holding a one goal lead in the last two league games. You know, when we've had Martinelli was still out there on, well, Martinelli and obviously Vieira came on against Aston Villa, and I was begging him to bring off Vieira rather than Zinchenko. I just thought it's strange to bring off a defender when you're holding a one goal lead. Zinchenko's maybe not like the best from a defensive perspective, but that was strange. But yeah, that's maybe a little bit of a concern. We don't have, not that I'm a huge Elneny fan, but we don't have an Elneny type player to come in and sort of help us see out the game, because obviously you'd expect Parr to be starting, and you wouldn't necessarily expect that from Jorginho if Jorginho is the man who is going to make way most of the time and be on the bench. But I don't think it's a huge deal, at least until it becomes one.
I mean, Zinchenko, I mean, it was only the 93rd minute, right? It really felt for the last. It felt like Rob Holding time, but it wasn't. Wasn't Rob Holding time. Wasn't brought on. It was Tomiyasu those last couple of minutes. But yeah, look, we came away, didn't we, from that Man City defeat, and it felt like the only response we can give is to go and get 6 points in those two games, and we've absolutely done it. And the way we feel now is, you know, not only because Man City dropped 2 points at Forest, but it just feels so much more like, you know, it's back in our hands. And I think psychologically getting that win on Wednesday night against Everton will be massive just for seeing that 5-point buffer back in place. So yeah, it's huge, huge 6-7 days ahead. Have you got special plans, Boyd, ahead of Wednesday night? Is there a Greek, Turkish? What are you going for?
No, I think I'm going to be rushing from work. Last week, I managed to leave work really early to get there for the one-on-one with Dermot. But I think Dermot can make it to that game. So it's going to be a straight to the game situation. That is going to be a nervy encounter. We'll preview it in full at the end, but just because that's the obvious. Also, I think Everton losing at the weekend doesn't help. I don't know. Yeah. They're kind of a bogey team, aren't they, really, for us? Like, I know we played them at literally the worst time of all when they had the proper new manager bounce, but I don't know. But before we talk about them, let's talk about, Saka's contract being renewed. It looks like they've agreed verbally, haven't they? They've agreed verbal terms, I believe. Ricky, I mean, that's a gigantic, gigantic development.
I guess, I don't know if there are any Arsenal fans that were concerned about it happening, but he's just the best. Like, he's just, I mean, what can you say that hasn't already been said? I mean, talking of players that, you know, could do with a rest, I mean, he just plays every single minute of every single game because we just have needed him to. Again, it would have been nice if we could have got a couple more goals on Saturday and maybe given him some time to put his feet up. But what a guy. What a guy, what a player. He's just been unbelievable. He's been so consistent. You know, for someone to play in that position for one of the top, I guess we have been at least pretty much one of the top six teams for the last almost two seasons. And, you know, you could probably count on one hand the amount of bad performances. Maybe I'm being a bit kind, but he's just so good. So good. And it's absolutely amazing if we can tie him down to, you know, what's to say he won't just stay arse for the rest of his life? Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, it'd be a dream, wouldn't it, Josh? I mean, yeah, it's a great bit of business, though, isn't it? I mean, I'm sure he's totally. I don't think he wants to leave Arsenal in any way whatsoever. But you do think he's the kind of player that Man City would swoop in for and try and pay 130 million for or something if they could,
or Chelsea,
Chelsea's
been like 500 million or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
They've got probably a few players they want to get rid of, so.
I mean, the whole Mudrick situation does make you think, doesn't it? I mean, you know, he was sub again on for Chelsea when they lost to Spurs, who are absolutely abominable at the moment, Chelsea. I do feel I felt genuinely sorry for him because he,
it
must be heartbreaking, mustn't it, that, you know, his agent and whatever almost forced him against his will to go to Chelsea when he had his heart set on us. And look at the situation he's in.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think the, you know, I think that's probably sadly the club. I'm sure the player and the agent did want him to go to Arsenal, but if the club are only accepting one offer and you want to get out of Shakhtar, then unfortunately his indecision was probably not on the table for him to come to Arsenal, sadly. But yeah, there's no question which club you'd rather be at if the money was similar. Right now, it's just, yeah, couldn't be a bigger, there probably hasn't been a bigger disparity between Arsenal and Chelsea for, I don't know how long. I mean, we're talking 20 plus years, aren't you, really, since we've been this far ahead of them. It's unusual. The Saka situation is obviously not done. I'm excited to see what the club will do the day he signs that new five-year deal or whatever it is. There better be the most wonderful, beautiful, emotive video showing him as like a young kid at Hale End dancing around other 11-year-olds and gradually seeing him grow up and, you know, wear the number 87 and then, you know, become an integral part of the Arsenal team. I'm excited for that already. I'm sure they've got the date. They're wondering when they need a bit of, you know, a good PR day or something like that for the Saka news.
Maybe just before the England break. There's an England break, isn't there, at the end of the month?
There is at the end of March. Yeah. I think England face Ukraine at the end of March. And I think Ian Wright was actually vocal on this over the weekend about saying, well, you know, we probably in our hearts, like Ricky alluded to, think there's enough emotional tie to make Saka stay at top of the league. You find a way to keep the player. It's William Saliba that Ian Wright was a little bit more worried about, saying that he really feels that, you know, he's the one that the club have got to concentrate on securing next. So fingers crossed.
Did you see the Saliba, Gabriel tete-a-tete?
I saw it not in real time. I certainly had no idea what was going on when I was in the stadium. I just saw it on Twitter after. Have there been any comments on further on that, Boyd?
No, just, you know, people saying, oh, it's a good thing, you know, that players have the occasional spat. I don't know if I'd go that far. I think it's interesting that Saliba seems like a very, I base this on almost no evidence whatsoever, but he seems like a very kind of quite intense figure, like emotional figure. And Gabriel, you know, he feels very intense and quiet, whereas Gabriel is quite vocal. And a lot of people, and he played brilliantly, don't get me wrong, didn't he? Both played really well. The whole defence played brilliantly. But it's interesting, there are moments suddenly when a player, where suddenly it feels like everyone, particularly on social media, but a lot of journalists as well, suddenly start highlighting a particular player. And Gabriel, I feel like, had his moment this weekend. And everyone's going, oh, by the way, Gabriel is one of the best central defenders in the league, which statistically he is. And he is fantastic, but he's also prone to the moment, an explosive moment of rash behavior. Whereas I feel like Saliba is on a much more even keel. I thought it was interesting that they clashed, Ricky, in that way.
Yeah, I think pre-World Cup, Saliba could have thrown his name into the hat for our best player up to that point. And I think it was just before the World Cup, he made a mistake against Wolves, or rather he got away with one against Wolves where he could have conceded a penalty as the last man. Then obviously at Brighton, he gave away a goal. He's had a couple of shaky moments. And Gabriel, post-World Cup, I think, has been almost flawless, if memory serves me rightly. So I think as a whole, they've been fantastic. Obviously, you know, you could say every single player has been fantastic, really. I'm sure the whole thing was all blown over and they probably forgot about it fairly quick, you like to think. But yeah, I think what Josh said is, I think every Arsenal fan has probably thought the same thing, that Saka, yeah, he'd probably stay, and Martinelli, why would he sort of leave? And if he did, we'd get good money for him. And he's good, but you know, you feel like with a centre back of Saliba's age, you feel like they just don't come around too often. He, you know, you really wanted to get him signed up. But you know, if you believe what you read, it seems promising, but you just don't know until he signs on the dotted line, right?
There's no question that trying to do a deal when you're top of the league and the morale and positivity around the club is at an all-time high has got to be coming to the thinking of trying to get deals done. But then, you know, I saw some comments on Twitter today that, you know, this Saka deal has been ongoing over the last 13 months. So you realise how long it takes to, you know, negotiate and for both parties to be happy with it. But yeah, I'm trying to imagine a scenario. Imagine that Saka left. Can you imagine the bedlam that there would be outside if, like, Saka left the club to go and play for another team in the Premier League? It would be chaotic, Boyd. Even you in club level would be rioting.
I think Athletic had an article not that long ago about contracts in general, and they specified about Arsenal. And, you know, these things, like you said, Josh, take so long, because I think it was Martinelli came out and said he wants to sign, but that's just, like, doesn't really mean anything. You know, the agents would obviously, in the club, will just talk for months and then they'll stop talking and they'll pick it up again and just goes on. I don't think it necessarily means good or bad. But yeah, like I said, we obviously want Saka to sign. He wanted to sign, but still, if that can still take 13 months, then goodness knows how long it's going to take if there's a little bit of, you know, friction from either side of the camp. But hopefully it's a matter of time with Saliba, and, you know, like Josh said, we're just waiting for that video for Arsenal to drop on Saka.
Mm. It's weird to think that we tried so desperately to get Mudryk, though, isn't it? Who would have been more in the Saka mould, wouldn't he, really, than, you know, Trossard or obviously, you know, whoever else he bought. It's so odd that we came so close to that. I wonder how it would have affected things, you know, how it would have affected our whole season. It's like a sliding doors moment, I feel.
Look, on both of them, right? You know, you look at the deals that have been done. You know, Caicedo could join from Brighton, then we wouldn't have had Jorginho, and who knows how that would have immediately gone. Mudryk, we've ended up with Trossard, who's settled in fine and, you know, had a good number of minutes. So
right now, it just looks like our window was brilliant, whereas, you know, Chelsea's looks completely perverse and insane.
Well, the Chelsea situation feels like it will take time to really tell the full story on that. You know, might have to wait till the end of next season and see how close they are to challenging or not to say, was it all worth it? But obviously right now it looks like a bit of a madness over there.
It's interesting how Graham Potter and two managers, I think, at least maybe Brendan Rodgers was singing the praises of Arsenal, wasn't he? But Graham Potter was talking about how, you know, Chelsea need to follow the example of Arsenal in sticking with Arteta. But very rather different situations. But now Arteta's become this like model, isn't he, for how to stick with your manager, give him a chance.
I mean, Boyd.
Yes. You
know, not to point fingers.
Yeah, here we go.
There are times.
I set it up. Come on.
You set it up where there were fingers being pointed and question marks raised. So you can understand where Potter's trying to come from, though. The pressure wasn't on Arteta in the way that it has and will be with Potter because of the absurd sums of money being spent on some incredibly good footballers. Let's not forget, this isn't, you know, just money for the sake of it. So there's more pressure. And also that, you know, Arsenal, you know, haven't won the level of trophies over the last 10, 15 years that Chelsea have, you know. So there's obviously different levels of expectation just around the two clubs when, you know, with the respective managers. I mean, I like Potter. I feel affiliated to Potter. I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before, but when I was the what was called activities officer at Leeds University Union, which is an elected role, I'll have you know, there were 6 candidates. I won. And I looked after the sports clubs and societies, which meant that on the varsity day, when Leeds University played against Leeds Metropolitan University in football, I like went down to like watch a football match and be around it. Now, in charge of Leeds University that day, helping manage, was no less than Brian Dean, the former Leeds United, Leicester City, Sheffield United striker. But it was a certain Graham Potter who was helping the Leeds Metropolitan team first 11 at that point. And that does show the most incredible journey that you can go from. That in 2010, Graham Potter's football management was at university level, and here we are 13 years later and he's, you know, managing at the top end of Europe, you know, a European club. So I do, you know, I've always kind of followed that kind of crazy journey as soon as I was aware of where he was, you know, going on it. Weirdly, and this is niche, but, you know, you're still listening, both Brian Dean and Graham Potter went off to manage in Scandinavia. Brian managed in Norway for a couple of years, fairly successfully, came back to the UK. But, you know, Graham Potter stayed on this Scandinavia adventure. We all know he ended up at Ostersunds, who we played, and then obviously came over to England. So I hope it goes a little bit better than it has been for Potter, but obviously it's quite funny seeing Chelsea how it goes.
Did he pick up more points as Leeds Met manager, or?
I imagine so. Leeds Met always had an incredibly strong football team. So I don't know. I need to go back and look at the Bucks records for you, Ricky. I'll endeavour to do that at the earliest opportunity.
Please.
Oh, what
I went off track there, boy.
Yeah, no, that was interesting about Graham Potter. Yeah, I didn't know. I mean, obviously, I didn't know a lot of that. Yeah, that's. I mean, I do feel sorry for him a bit, but as you say, it couldn't happen to a more hilarious club than Chelsea. I have absolutely no sympathy for them whatsoever, and they're, you know, that squad's cost is like 900 and nearly 50 million or something. I mean, it's fucking ridiculous.
I'm also biased. There's quite something about the Aubameyang situation that gets.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Arteta. What a blinder in a way. I mean, look, we've seen it with Man United as well. I'm not going to say it's exactly the same situation, but Ronaldo leaving has...
Yeah. Oh, very similar. Yeah.
Them to a level where maybe they didn't anticipate and they had to get rid of that character to
did you
kind
see
of push forward.
Robbie Thingy on Five Live, you know... what's his
Savage?
Name? Savage, of course. Robbie Savage said that Ten Hag is currently the best manager in the world. You see, he said that after the League Cup, the Carabao Cup. If he's the best manager in the world, right, and Man United are currently, what, 5 points behind us, 8 points behind if we win our game in hand, then what does that make Arteta? I mean, that makes Arteta,
It makes Charlie Savage, who's still a Manchester United player, son of Robbie Savage, who, right. I'm sure, not had too many appearances at Forest Green on his own move. I'm sure he's hoping for a return to Old Trafford.
I do have a question about Man U. I am still worried about them. I am worried about Man U.
I went yesterday. Work-wise. Yes, I was at Wembley. I had a double football weekend. Wow. You know, enjoyed being at the Carabao Cup final. I did probably want Newcastle to win.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
United were solid. I think until the goal, I thought it was a fairly even game. But then United did just go through a few gears and create, you know, good opportunities. Yeah. And look, with Rashford at the moment, they've got one of the most informed players, Europe at the moment.
So Rashford and Casemiro are both fantastic. Ricky,
I have to say, I really, really enjoyed watching Newcastle lose.
What have you got against Newcastle?
Well, just the obvious.
Well, the Saudi Arabian thing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I enjoyed Eddie Howe, just wet fish, just enjoyed watching him. So I watched him on the sideline, just looking very forlorn. And I think my favorite part was when Fabian Schär just threw himself on the floor and him and Jason Tindall went like mad. I think it was a penalty. And it was just, Man United is quite strange. They've gone, was it 5 or 6 years without a trophy? But, for Newcastle to be so close but so far away was enjoyable.
Okay. I gave some Newcastle fans some directions. There was like literally tens of thousands of Newcastle fans in London on Saturday, the day before the bloody game. Yeah. And I did feel like, you know, I enjoyed like showing them where to go because they were literally walking around London like they had no idea. Yeah. They just beamed in from space or something.
Yeah, I saw some in a cafe at very early on Sunday morning enjoying a post-cup final.
But I do have some. I have some fear about Man United because they're on such a roll that they. And I know they are. You know, they're a decent number of points behind us. But actually, people keep saying, like I tweeted this about a week ago, and I had loads of. I don't understand overly confident football fans who are like who have that whole this kind of blasé, this like, almost like performative. You know, oh. You know, no chance at all. Don't be stupid. You know, they are going to be a gigantic total of 5 points behind or whatever, you know. And you're like, that's nothing. You know, we ourselves at one point, we remember, we got 1 point, what, out of nine in our little blip period. So, and they're on a brilliant roll. So I am scared of both Man City and Man United. Am I stupid to be scared of Man United?
Personally, I don't think that someone actually said it in the WhatsApp group that I'm in, that they are in the title hunt. And I said, yeah, they're in it, but they won't win it. I know you joked about Ten Hag being the best manager in the world at the moment. I think he has done a fantastic job. Ronaldo leaving has been the best thing that's happened to him and the club. I don't think they'll catch us this season, but I think going forward they'll have a very good team. They've spent an insane amount of money and they've got a decent team, but not fantastic. And they'll probably sign a lot better going forward. Although I think their last signing was Weghorst, so who knows? So yeah, I don't think they'll trouble us too much this season. Just, you know, we don't have to play them again, it's probably unfortunate they don't have to play City again. Yeah, beyond this season, I think they'll just get better.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it makes it even more urgent that we do actually win this season, because we're going to have a resurgent Man U next season. I guess we should turn our attention to two games to predict very excitingly in the all important prediction section of the podcast. What do we think, Josh, is going to happen on Wednesday night then, in the game in hand, which is the crucial game? I mean, I know every single game feels unbelievably crucial, but this is the game in hand that we've been waiting so long for, against Everton, who we were disastrous against when we played them away. What do you think is going to happen, Josh?
Yeah, I didn't enjoy that trip to Goodison Park. Would really enjoy putting that right on Wednesday night. I worry that it's going to be one of these like nervous atmospheres, because this, you know, they get bigger and bigger, right? Every week that goes by and we're top of the league, the kind of gravity of the game. And I think we've seen that with the Emirates crowd. It has been and felt tangible nervousness, particularly that Brentford home game. It felt like that. But here I am, and I think we'll win. I thought away at Everton, they, you know, played percentage football. They were trying to get as many crosses as they could, get as many corners, and eventually they scored from one. I think it'll be a tough evening, but I think it might take until late in the game, but I think Arsenal can prevail here 2-0.
Ricky?
I think it'll be similar to the game that we had at their place, but they probably won't be quite as up for it. They won't have the crowd on their side. And yeah, without just sort of copying Josh's score, I would say 2-0 as well. But it wouldn't surprise me if we were looking at 0-0 with 10 minutes to go, and, you know, suddenly the whole stadium was in sheer panic mode and some hero stepped up with a last minute winner. That would be sweet. But yeah, don't want to go through that.
I do think we'll probably see Trossard again. I think Eddie might be sort of kept back on the bench. I can only really see,
I think so,
the possibility of Tomiyasu and White. I think that feels fairly interchangeable right now. I think other than that, and obviously I think if Partey's fit, I think he comes in and probably does so for Jorginho. So I think there'll be a couple of changes, but in terms of that front three, I think there was enough there to carry on with those three up front. What do you feel, Boyd?
I agree with that, yeah. I think it's going to be 1-0. Yeah, I think it's going to be. I was going to suggest exactly the narrative that Ricky suggested, that it's going to be painfully frustrating for quite a long period of time, I imagine, because he'll have them, you know, yeah, he'll have them in a permanent low block, I would have thought. It's a 1-0. And then Bournemouth at home, obviously got smashed into tiny pieces by Man City at the weekend. It would be good to get our goal difference. The one thing I worry about with this title race, well, I worry about 5,000 things, but one of the many things I worry about is that they've got much better goal difference than us, and they've got 8 better goal difference. So which is basically a weird point, you know, that's like, that, no, you're shaking your head, Josh.
I don't think we'll catch them on goal difference. I think if we're going to win the title, it will have to be by points. It just feels the way it's going, you know, with the attacking force that they've got. Look, 8 goals in 14 games is entirely possible to swing that around. You know, we obviously play against them, so, you know, it counts both ways there. Bournemouth is a weird situation, you know, right now, because it did feel like when they had the managerial sort of change quite early on in the season, they obviously had that, you know, extraordinary 9-0 defeat. And then they went on this run of, I think, about six without losing. But right now, I mean, they won at Wolves, but that was kind of their only positive, you know, only win certainly since, you know, just prior to the World Cup. So they have been in like wretched form and a pretty, you know, heavy favourite to get relegated. So, you know, if we look ahead to sort of games we've got left this season, I think this is, you know, the easiest one really. So I do think we'll get some goals. I think we'll win this one 3-1.
Rick?
Yeah, I guess it's an obvious thing to say, but if we are going to thrash anyone, else this season? Did we thrash anyone this season? Yeah, I guess we beat Bournemouth 3-0 away, Forest 5-0 at home. Yeah, I guess this is a good chance, but I don't even like the thought of getting too cocky and thinking, you know, looking too far ahead. So, yeah, I'd say 3-0 because, as Josh said, they are not a fantastic team.
No, I'm going to say 2-0 just to keep on the slightly pessimistic side of things. Well, thank you very much, Ricky, as ever, for joining us. Thank you, Josh. Thank you so much, Ricky. And we'll be back next week. Bye.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.